Business Class is brought to you by the Tourism Academy, harnessing the power of science, business psychology, and adult education to advance the tourism industry and build sustainable economies. Learn how to engage your community, win over stakeholders, and get more visitors at tourismacademy.org.
Steve Ekstrom here, host of the Business Class podcast. Joining me today is somebody with a very interesting background for the tourism and travel industry, Dominic Bravo, CEO of Visit Cheyenne, Wyoming. And Dominic, I will start by telling you, it is very rare that this happens, but I'm a digital nomad and I'm actually in Wyoming.
That's great. That's awesome. Where are you at?
I'm in Carbon County.
Oh, phenomenal. That's exciting.
Yeah, I play a fantastic game of connect the dots. Whenever something seems interesting or I have friends someplace, I put a pin on a map. And then usually there's one place I have to be a couple months out, and it's just a big game of connect the dots to get there. This is my first time exploring this part of the country and in the area where you are, and I love it. Did you grow up in Cheyenne?
No, I was originally Southern Colorado, and then I was a park ranger in Nevada for a few years until I moved here in 2008.
So I was going to ask you that. When do you first remember finding an interest in parks and culture and history and nature?
I've told this story a couple of times, and I think it shows my age, but it was actually probably from a young age. My family always camped and fished and did all of those things. So just always loved the outdoors. Didn't really think about it as a career, but it was actually Sylvester Stallone's Cliffhanger. I think I was in like the eighth grade. I went to the movie theaters. And of course, they call out the ranger and all that stuff. I'm like, wait a second. Started doing some research and realized that park rangers get to work outside. So as soon as I left high school, and technically even during high school, I was doing some volunteering, I made sure my college kind of trajectory lent itself to working in state parks specifically. I did look at national parks for a little while, but it was mostly state parks that I really enjoyed. And then when I graduated from Colorado State, I pretty much applied to every Western state as a park ranger. And Nevada was the first one that called. So that's where I ended up to start my career.
When did you first learn about destination marketing?
So that was much, much later. When I became the state park director, I moved here in 2008, jumped a couple steps because at the time I was a park superintendent in Nevada. And I came in drinking from a fire hose in 2008. I was 30 years old at the time. And as the state park director, interacted closely with the DMO here. So Visit Cheyenne itself, this is the capital city. And we actually partnered on a couple of events. And that's where I started just learning about what that meant and what they do. And probably a few years after that, they asked me to be on the board. So I served on Visit Cheyenne's board. So that was probably when it started taking place.
The term stewardship has really began to resonate after COVID, when a lot of destinations realized that they had to not just worry about heads in beds, but worry about the sustainability of their communities. Coming from the background that you have, how has that helped you be a steward for your community?
So I think the interesting thing for us is we were dealing with that already at a state park level. There are some of our parks that were already overloved, but a lot of it also meant that I had to look at stewardship in a different way. We're in a politically charged state. Obviously, our top line of what pays the bills is mineral extraction. The energy industry is top line. Second, and I will say it helps balance out the boom bust cycle, is tourism. Not a close second, but definitely a very impactful and important second. So for us, our approach had to be very unique. But it did actually lend itself to everything now, even in this world as a destination management organization, stewardship means more about balance than anything else. And it means that you have to think more than just environment and conservation, but you also have to think about business strategy and vibrancy and vitality and economic impact and all those things. Because when you go too far to either side of it, you start damaging the balance and really don't can't fulfill the mission that you set forth, whether that's informing visitors coming to your location about ethics and outdoor ethics and how they should recreate or just visit your destination. It also means taking a holistic approach, specifically for state parks. I talked about it. I pretended to be a shade tree marketer at the time, but we talked about Big M, which is the stuff that's true marketing, the digital content and posts and all that type of stuff. But then I talked about Little M, which is marketing where you almost utilize it for how you actually do natural resource management, because I have a lot of education on that side of it. But it was just being able to, you know, disperse people. Normal outdoor ethic is you can't think that you're just going to leave no trace on a state park that you're specifically inviting people to come and visit. But are you dispersing them correctly? And that's the thing, is how do you, you know, tell people that, yeah, that really close front trailhead is the one that everyone wants to go to. Everyone wants, you know, it's easy access. It's right off the road. But you go 2 miles down the road and one that's less used, the trails are less used, but you're going to get a different experience. And it's being able to maximize, you know, the location. And by doing that, then you start to not have the same impacts versus just don't come visit. We don't want visitors. We don't want them here. They shouldn't come. And then at the same time, I think it's also being a little bit thoughtful. I think all of us in any of the industries, whether it's state parks or tourism, sometimes we forget where our people get their information. So it's meeting people where they are. You deal with different cultures, people from other countries. And if we aren't getting the information that they can consume in a way that makes sense to them, we aren't really going to change anything. That's why we still have people trying to pet bison at Yellowstone National Park and getting really close to a grizzly bear or trying to you know, dip their toe into 150 degree hot springs. We are failing because we think we get that information out, or we're holding people accountable through some type of social media post when that may not be where they even get their information. And I think we can do a better job in that space. But yeah, pretty much for my whole career, I've approached that kind of stewardship and sustainability concept in a much different way, mainly because you have to take all of those components in place to be successful.
It's people, it's place, and it's profits, and striking the balance there. I definitely see that. What's been your most proud moment at work at Visit Cheyenne?
That's a great question. I guess it probably would have been how we were able to maneuver through the pandemic. We host the world's largest outdoor rodeo and Western celebration. We're known for our Western heritage and people from around the world think about us, cowboys, cowgirls, that type of culture. And when Cheyenne Frontier Days had to cancel in 2020, we didn't really know what to do at that time. Luckily, we had some CARE Act dollars, but rather than shore up our budget, we actually decided to create events. So we worked with our local health department. There were stipulations about how many people you could have in. We still had people traveling to us. We wanted to make it as safe as we possibly could. So we actually created our own Hell on Wheels rodeo series. We're coming into our fifth year. So I would say thinking outside the box, and I hate that because everyone says that type of word, innovation and outside the box thinking. But I think it was that approach that really helped save our destination. We probably only were down about 19% in occupancy and only about 35% in revenue overall. We implemented all the same stuff that many others did. You know, we helped restaurants and stuff that never had done anything in regards to sales where they could do curbside sales and all of that type of thing. But the key is for us is when everything came back, we didn't lose what we had built. We're coming into, this is my fourth year in this position, and our numbers are record breaking. We already had two hotels come online. We have two more coming online pretty quickly. And so it was one of those things that we just, every year we don't rest on our laurels. So I think that's the proudest moment is we never let the grass grow. We were always making stuff happen. And so that's probably the proudest moment for me.
I'll give you a moment to take a look around your office. What is your favorite item and why?
Now, I'm definitely not going to be able to answer that because each corner of my office is dedicated to something different. It's fun because I have my buckles and cowboy hat rack here. So it's my Western stuff. Behind me is a little bit of a shout out to my state park days. It's a close up of a campfire. So it's actually a close up shot of a campfire. I did a lot of stuff in land and water conservation and stuff when I was the National Association of State Parks Director President. So I was our president of our national association. So I have a kind of like the warrior thing over in the corner there. And then I'm a big Disney guy since my kids were little and we lived in Nevada. It was really close to go to Disneyland. And interesting enough, in 2022, we went to Paris because Disneyland Paris actually has a hotel based on Cheyenne. So we're pretty honored to be recognized in that space because at Disneyland Paris, they have Santa Fe, the Hotel New York, one that's Hotel Sequoia, and to have Cheyenne, kind of the little tiny capital of Cheyenne, be one of those recognized. It was fun. So they celebrated a 30th anniversary. So I have a Disney one where the GM actually sent me the Hotel Cheyenne being constructed.
That's pretty cool. How would you like your staff to describe you?
Staff to describe me. I guess the biggest one is just, yeah, that's actually an interesting. I don't know if I never really pondered it that way. I guess I'm just one of those leaders that is out front pulling with them. So I'm a leader who likes to be in the trenches. We actually just went out yesterday before a meeting we had, and I got a text from one of my staff that just said, "Thanks for always being such a great boss. It's nice that you always have that team feeling for us." I think that's the biggest thing is we feel, I probably see more of my staff than I do my family sometimes. So we feel like a big family, and we're fast, dynamic. We have to adjust quickly to things. And I think as long as they see that I'm willing to be in the trenches with them, they all are bought in and passionate and talented people that are all trying to achieve the same goals. So I think that's, if anything, I just foster that team environment that helps us all achieve success.
What personality trait do you think is most important when you're making your new hires?
That's the interesting one. The weird one is always seems like you're fitting it for the team. So I try to have my VP, he's usually on the interviews, and depending on what section it might be in, whether it be marketing or events, that person would be in on those. Because I have found that resumes these days look great, but trying to find somebody that fits the team. So a lot of our questions lend themselves to that critical thinking and communication style and able to adjust to change those types of things. So it's almost like the intangible, innate personality things that you may be more difficult to learn because, as you well know, in this industry, like it's quick moving. You have to be able to shift and communicate quickly and succinctly and all those things because that's what you instantly fail on. We've been dealing with, I'm sure you have heard about the wolf issue thing, that even though it's miles and miles away from where we are, even here in the capital city, we have a couple social media and phone calls. So being able to make sure staff are, thinking critically and how we answer that or how we don't, are all important pieces.
I had a conversation with our team not too long ago, and I emphasized the fact that we're a learning organization. Before we teach anything, before we provide any technology, before we do any of that stuff, it's incumbent upon us to learn and to do better today than we did yesterday and plan to do better tomorrow still. The comment that I made was that if you're doing the same thing you were doing a year and a half ago, you're probably doing it wrong. And I think in destinations, it's like you said, it's fast moving. There's always a new challenge. That demand for lifelong learning is a tremendous skill. What is something that you're looking to learn in the coming year?
I know it's the big hot topic trend with AI components, but I've had already been utilizing it in different ways. I'd love to say that I've always tried to be at the cutting edge of technology, but that's just not humanly possible. I think so. When I actually got my degree, it was natural resource management. I had a minor in GIS, so it was the first time that GIS, GPS was coming out, and I like to tell, like, I was on a call last week, and I was like, I had one of those Trimble units. It was like this big, and you had the big antenna on it. And of course, now you can do it on your cell phone, and you can do all the fancy mapping and everything you want to with a smartphone. So I think that's probably the always the one is, where does that technology, where it makes sense, affordable, and is it actually improving the visitor economy for us, whether that's efficiency and effectiveness for the staff functionality or whatever. Because, for instance, the 2 or 3 months I was on before we had to shut down for the pandemic, I had already initiated all these things. We were utilizing Slack for a lot of our communications, and we had gone to a virtual server that hadn't existed, and all these things that we were able to do so we could collaborate. And that's where I see some of the AI stuff that we're utilizing now. But now some of the new components have really fired up, and just trying to find time to learn those components in a way that makes sense. That's probably the biggest piece I've been utilizing. I've been trying to fit in time to do that. The LinkedIn, I remember it was a LinkedIn training that had a video training piece that I was working on with AI. I wasn't as cool as my counterpart in Estes Park. So Tara actually did a full-on certification course. But if I can put that into my time, I'll try that too.
What's been the most expensive lesson you've learned, whether that be financial or emotional or psychological? What's been the biggest challenge?
Not my entire life, I think, and it'll always be a challenge, is just politics. I think I did an advocacy podcast, and there's to move the needle in all the things. And the way I look at the world is, you always just want to do what's best for the maximum amount of people. And that is not always the easiest part when it comes to politics. So throughout my entire career, whether that was at the lowest level of being like a seasonal at a state park to being a state park director, a CEO of a destination management organization, it's maneuvering the politics. Because as much as I say we're a change agent, we always have to be ready for the unexpected. The political world, especially these days, is just always something that you have to be thoughtful, and it feeds into your advocacy plan and your communication strategy and your marketing and everything. But in the back of my mind, it's always that, okay, how can I move the needle? How can we make a difference? How can we have that positive impact? So I think that's probably the biggest lesson learned, is I've had numerous, too many to name on this show. You may have to talk to me offline. I have so many numerous lessons learned where, yeah, you just don't make that mistake again. It's okay. I learned that one. I got to do it in a different way. So yeah, so that's probably constantly learning in that space. But yeah, there's too many to mention in that. But
Who in your personal space do you look up to as a mentor?
personal space, my wife is amazing. I will say that. She doesn't agree, but she's phenomenal. I think she's been the one that's, because we married her early on in my career. She's amazingly talented. So I think she hones my crazy energy that makes it so it's actually directed some direction. But in my personal life, I have so many great mentors. And it's from everything from my current staff to previous bosses. I still interact with so many different people. So I probably have, I'm very fortunate because I'm surrounded by just amazing, talented leaders across the board. I've met new ones in this organization, like at the Destinations International level. There's just, I could just name off everything from Al from Baltimore to Don, who's running DI, to close here, Wes over in Stockton, Melissa, who's now in charge of our new outdoor, or One West Tourism Alliance.
You're naming a lot of my friends. I'm going to say.
I'm just saying there's so many in this industry that, and then of course, even at a local level, Diane Schober, she's the director of our IAMI Office of Tourism. My previous boss at state parks and the like bigger department agencies have been phenomenal. But yeah, I guess I think I have mentors on every scale in every way, shape, or form, which is a nice problem to have, I guess.
What is a misconception about your work that you would like to myth bust?
I think the biggest one, and I'm trying to do a better job of it, I think we always fail to tell our story. For the longest time, even my predecessor, we always say that we leak our like ads and stuff, because our goal is to get in, people in from the region, drive markets and even further international. And so we don't always post our TV ads and all that type of stuff. So obviously with the advent of social media and digital content, we've been able just to leak that stuff. We work really closely with, heck, even our local newspaper, local radio stations. So we, even though it costs us a little bit of money, we ensure that people see all of our various ads and stuff, because maybe you don't listen to Sirius XM, or maybe you don't do any of the other types of paid radio that we do. At your local radio station, you may hear a Visit Cheyenne ad, and you're like, man, we're getting information out there. If you go to the Cowboy Channel, we're probably Cheyenne is well represented because both Cheyenne Frontier Days, our local EDC, and us all have ads running. So you know that Cheyenne's on the map when it comes to the Cowboy Channel. So I'd say, like, I think folks just don't realize it because we don't say it enough. Pretty much any article that comes out from Forbes to Travel and Leisure is probably because of something that Visit Cheyenne and our PR firm worked on. Because I actually had a city council person say, "Hey, you got to send this to Dominic." And I'm like, "I know about it, councilman. We're the ones that paid for that person to come and we paid for their hotel. And that, yes, we have an amazing art scene. Don't get me wrong. But if you don't tell someone about it, they don't come write about it." So that's how we got into Forbes. And I think that's the one that always is just frustrating, is it seems like you're constantly in that advocacy mode to say, "Hey, look at us, we're cool." Pretty much anything you think that you see on anything is probably because of our efforts, which sounds horribly egocentric, and that's probably why we don't do it. That's not what, that's what we're in the business of. But that's probably the biggest myth, is more likely than not, if it's in the tourism or the travel economy, it's probably because of something that we're doing as an organization.
I like the way that you phrase that. It's strategically leaking things meant for external outsiders to your insiders.
So, what was the thought process for the Tourism Academy, like creating it?
It goes back to as early as 2010. I worked in tourism development. The first half of my career was on-site. Second half of that was consulting and working with destinations and identifying product and bringing it to market. Went to a lot of trade shows, saw a lot of the same speakers at the trade shows, participated in I don't know how many webinars that were exciting enough that I went and made coffee while it was running, or maybe watched it, maybe didn't. Sheena Works, who's now the chief learning officer here, came with me to a couple trade shows and observed that, geez, it's the same people. Is this how all of the education stuff is? Well, yeah, kind of. Her background's in organizational psychology and instructional design. And she said, there's a better way to do this. Yeah, sure, whatever. Then she came with me to a program that I taught, and she said it would make a great online course. This is back in 2014, 2015, 2014, probably. I thought she was a little nutty, to be fair. I'm a learner, I'm a nerd. And when somebody gives me gives me a suggestion like that, I want to understand why. And that started my learning process in the space of online learning and instructional design and organizational psychology and how adults learn differently online. And that was really the start of it. So we did probably 4 or 5 years of beta testing different learning platforms and technologies and strategies and methodologies and all of this in the background of the consulting work that I was doing. And then when COVID struck, we brought it full forward. And now as an organization, there are really only three things that we do. We license technology so people can build and run and manage their own training programs. We work with organizations to help them build their own programs. So we apply that instructional design, that organizational psychology, that behavioral economics, and of course, tourism knowledge so that folks can have their own programs that meet learners where they're at. And the last thing that we do, of course, is as subject matter experts, we teach and we teach and we train. And it's a really cool space, and I'm gonna toot my own horn, but we had 6,000 students logged in working with us yesterday,
Nice.
all around the world.
That's great. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's one of those things where I didn't do it to make the money. I did it because it was the right thing to do. And I'm a strong believer that when you do the right thing for the right reasons, everything works out in the end. Thank you for being a guest here on the podcast and business class. I appreciate it. If there's ever any opportunity for us to get together, well, I'll see you at DI, I'm sure, in July.
Yes.
But don't hesitate to reach out.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. Take care.
To learn more about how you can visit Cheyenne, Wyoming, visit Cheyenne.org.